All right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate, and I'm very happy to be here today. It's been way too long. It seems it's been almost a week. I don't know what the hell we're going to do. And sitting next to me is somebody, I always enjoy seeing him. He always pokes me a little to make me, I don't know, wake up and, what, smell the coffee or drink the coffee?
You got to do both, Mike. You got to, first off, smell it to be sure it's fresh.
And this is a longtime friend, Andy Z, and he's going to be joining us to talk about some of the most important stuff that's going on in the world right now, I think. And at the back end of the show, that'll be at the back end of the show where he's talking about. Before that, and in order to set the context for our discussion, we're going to hear a piece called Racial Oppression Can Be Ended, But Not Under This System. And that's by Bob Avakian. All right. And people should really get your ears cleaned out, ready to sit down and listen to that and think about it. And it's extremely important, folks. When you're looking at what's happening in the world today and you look at what's happening to people all over the world, what's happening here, all this kind of stuff should not be tolerated. And this is, I think, I was really looking forward to doing the show. I mean, it's interesting because we had talked about it a little bit beforehand, but I just thought, you know, when it was really out there, I just thought this is something we really need to get because people don't hear this on a regular basis here. Yeah,
you know? It's true, Michael. And you just, I hope a lot of your audience is listening to the coverage of the trial of Derek Chauvin and the comments from the people who witnessed this, the 17-year-old who recorded the videotape, the martial arts instructor. And you get this tremendous sense of just unending and unendurable injustice that people have in their hearts, they can't accept it, but they see this reality, including George Floyd himself saying, they're going to kill me, man. I'm going to die here. This is the reality of America. And so this piece, though, it gets to a very important question that was posed by this and the rebellion, the beautiful rising last spring, almost a year ago now, where people rose up against racial oppression and then keep straining against the reality that this system can be reformed and we could eliminate racial oppression under this system, which has white supremacy woven into every thread of it. So this piece by Bob Avakian goes deeply into why this is a part of the dynamics and of capitalism itself. And this is very important, the historically way white supremacy and capitalism have been woven together in the system, and then why we need a revolution and why that's even possible. So this should be very important. It's substantive. And, you know, then we'll have some time for talking about it.
Okay. But before we begin that, I have an important announcement to make. I want to bring you the emergency appeal to free Iran's political prisoners. You can find out more or sign the urgent appeal at www.revcom.us or the campaign website, www.freeiranspoliticalprisoners.org. International pressure and media coverage, mainly spearheaded by family members, human rights activists, efforts by the Burn the Cage / Free the Birds campaign in Europe, joined by supporters in Canada and the U.S., have led to small but notable concessions from the brutal Islamic regime. For instance, women's rights activist Nahid Dakavi was recently released from solitary confinement. Internationally renowned lawyer Nasreen Sotoudeh has been temporarily released on medical leave. Yet the situation facing Iran's political prisoners remains increasingly dire. There are growing reports of the Islamic theocrats suddenly transferring prisoners, especially women, to isolated locations far from loved ones and supporters. It is continually widening the targets of its various waves of repression. This includes women and workers' rights activists, environmentalists, civil rights advocates, religious and ethnic minorities, artists, intellectuals, and revolutionaries. That is, anyone and everyone demanding basic rights is suspected of being an intellectual, cultural, and political dissident to be cruelly and forcefully crushed. It remains a real matter of life and death in the literal sense that this emergency appeal gets further out and becomes a social force. Imagine if it becomes a moral and political force that exerts influence in the public square and actually reverses the current trajectory where Iran's political prisoners face long sentences, continuous interrogations, floggings, tortured confessions, and possible execution. Right now, there is a specific need to make a breakthrough. Lives really hang in the balance. I call on all of my listeners who believe in justice and want a better world to endorse and actively spread and advocate for the emergency appeal to friends, families, colleagues, and throughout society, including on social media. In particular, get it into the hands of prominent voices of conscience and correspond with the emergency campaign with your ideas for outreach and qualitatively raising the profile of this timely appeal. And once again, this is bringing you the emergency appeal to free Iran's political prisoners. And you can find out more or sign this urgent appeal at www.revcom.us or the campaign website, www.freeiranspoliticalprisoners.org. And you can find all of this information on my Facebook page as well. This show and what we're going to hear next are taking place during the trial of the pig Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd. Chauvin is now charged with second-degree murder, third-degree murder, and second-degree manslaughter. The outcome of this trial and what the masses of people do in an effort to determine that outcome will have consequences. Very important that people understand this. It will have consequences. The system must not be allowed to let Chauvin off or to give him a slap on the wrist. Chauvin must be punished for straight-up murder of George Floyd, so it's very important that people have begun to stand up and fight to prevent what could be a terrible injustice on top of an utter horror from going down. And it goes on, and I think it's worth listening to. The trial has shown sharp contrast between the humanity of George Floyd and the people who shared his last minutes, who empathized with him, tried to help him, tried to stop his murder, and the callous, depraved heartlessness of his murderers. Many have commented on air and in print on the implications of the trial and that it concentrates the oppression of black people in the U.S. and that George Floyd could have been any black man. As stated in the website revcom.us, but to really get free, to put an end to the kind of horror that the world saw go down in that Minneapolis afternoon, that goes on and goes on and goes on all the time, year in and year out over the centuries. To end the suppression of black people as part of ending all forms of oppression and exploitation all over the world, people need science and they need leadership. So that most important thing is that through this struggle for justice, more people are enabled to learn about, to get into, and to get organized around a scientific understanding of the problem and the road to the solution, to revolution, nothing less. So that's what the rest of the show will be about. Right now, we're going to hear Bob Avakian, the chairman of the Revolutionary Communist Party, speaking on racial oppression can be ended, but not under this system. And then I'll be talking with Andy Z about all of this. So stay tuned. And here's Bob Avakian.
Racial oppression can be ended, but not under this system. Everywhere we go and in everything we do, we RevComs boldly put forward revolution, nothing less. This is not just a slogan, though it is a very good and very important slogan. It is the concentrated statement of a very profound truth, which is also captured in our slogan, this system cannot be reformed. It must be overthrown. But what do we mean in saying that this system cannot be reformed? And why is that true? In why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution, I speak to the five stops, deep and defining contradictions of this system, and all the terrible suffering to which this system of capitalism imperialism subjects the masses of humanity, and why all this cannot be ended under this system. Here I am going to focus on the systematic and murderous oppression of black people and racial oppression overall, which has been sharply exposed with the outpouring of outrage sparked by the murder of George Floyd, and discuss the basic reasons why this oppression cannot be eliminated under this system, but can only be ended through revolution. The continuing terror and murder carried out by the police, particularly against black people, as well as Latinos and Native Americans, is not fundamentally because the police are racist, although speaking of the police overall, that is certainly true. The fact that the police are racist is itself an expression and a function of the fact that terror and murder against black people and other people of color is required by this system, is necessary in order to maintain the order of this all-around oppressive system. And this would be much more difficult to carry out if the police were not racist. the fundamental causes of this oppression. But going deeper, why is this terror and murder necessary for this system in order to ensure its order and its ongoing functioning? The answer is that from the beginning of this country, white supremacy has been poured into the foundation and built into the institutions and the ongoing functioning of this system. Specifically with regard to black people, the centuries of oppression they have suffered, from slavery days to the days of Jim Crow segregation and Ku Klux Klan terror, to the present time, with the continuing systematic discrimination against black people in every part of society, employment, housing, education, health care, and on and on. All this has resulted in a situation where masses of black people today, and in particular youth, have been robbed of a means for a decent life, with many maintained in conditions of desperate poverty and deprivation. This, again, is not simply because those who are in the seats of power and deciding government policy are racist, though that is true of most of them. It is fundamentally because of the nature of the system itself and the historically evolved requirements and dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism. Now that is a big mouthful. The nature of the system itself and the historically evolved requirements and dynamics of this system of capitalism imperialism. So let's break it down. This country was founded on the enslavement of masses of African people, as well as the genocidal subjugation of Native Americans and theft of their land. And its further development involved the conquest of huge parts of Mexico, reducing people of Mexican origin to second-class status as well. This required the propagation of racism to justify all the horrific oppression. Then, when the Civil War broke out over the question of slavery, and even when slavery was abolished as a result of that Civil War, given that white supremacy had been and remained such a crucial part of the glue holding the country together, the only way to put it back together on the foundation of the capitalist system was to once again forcefully assert white supremacy. That is why, very soon after the end of the Civil War, black people were subjected to the system of Jim Crow segregation, backed up by systematic terror, punctuated by repeated lynchings, while the genocidal aggression against and theft of the land of Native Americans was stepped up, and immigrants from Mexico were subjected to ongoing discrimination and violence by the enforcers of this system. Generations later, during World War II, because of the needs of the rulers of this country in waging that war, large numbers of black people were able to migrate to the North and get jobs in industries that served the war effort. And then, largely as a result of the fact that the U.S. was on the winning side of that war, and the fact that the war was not fought on its territory, and it experienced no damage to its industrial facilities and infrastructure, there was an expansion of the economy in this country after the war. In this situation, significant numbers of black people were able to continue getting employment in large numbers, including some better paying jobs in factories, making steel, cars, and so on. But at the same time, because of the white supremacy built into the system over centuries, and the fact that really moving to overcome this would tear apart the fabric of the system and crack its very foundation, black people continued to be subjected to systematic discrimination, including in employment, with last hired and first fired an accurate description of the situation of black people with regard to employment. To cite another ugly example, government policy with regard to housing involved conscious, deliberate discrimination. After World War II, loans were given to white people to enable them to buy their own homes and increasingly move to the suburbs, while this was denied to black veterans and others, and instead black people were piled into segregated housing projects in the inner cities. And this was part of the continuing systematic segregation and discrimination to which black people were subjected. As a result of the civil rights movement, and then the more radical black liberation movement in the 1960s, some concessions were made, and there has been an increase in the number of black faces in high places and a growth of the black middle class, although their situation is far more precarious than that of white middle class people, something which was cruelly demonstrated in the 2008 crisis, which resulted in large numbers of black people losing their homes and much, if not all, of any savings they had. And in more recent times, huge numbers of factories and other sources of jobs for people in the inner city have closed down, often moving their operations elsewhere, particularly to countries in the third world, Latin America, Africa, the Middle East, and Asia, where the desperate situation of masses of people, including children, has left them vulnerable to being super exploited at near starvation wages. All this, together with increased automation and cybernation of production, when combined with the ongoing segregation and discrimination built into this system, has led to a situation where huge numbers of black people, and especially youth, have for generations now not only been unemployed, but are left with no prospect of meaningful employment in the regular formal economy. The toxic combination of capitalism and racism. Here we see the toxic combination of systematic, historically evolved segregation and discrimination enforced with brutal violence by the powers that be, together with the basic functioning and requirements of the capitalist economy, which involves the greater and greater concentration, not just of wealth, but of means of production, technology, factories, and other physical structures, sources of raw materials, and so on, in the possession and under the control of large-scale capitalist enterprises and financial institutions, which are locked in cutthroat competition with each other, not just within a particular country, but increasingly on a global scale, and are therefore driven to ruthlessly exploit people and constantly search for ways to even more viciously super-exploit large numbers of desperate people, including children, in a worldwide network of sweatshops. For example, cell phones and computers depend on the mineral coltan, which is mined under horrific conditions by people, including large numbers of children, in the Congo and Africa. And a large part of the clothes that are bought in the U.S. are produced by huge numbers of women working in horrific conditions in the Asian country of Bangladesh. In this situation, and especially with the growth of the international drug trade and its deep penetration into the U.S., many of those, in particular youth, who found themselves locked out of the formal economy, have turned to drug dealing as well as other criminal activity, something which has been encouraged by government policy that has actually resulted in the movement of large amount of drugs into the inner city, even as the authorities seize on this situation to carry out systematic repression against the youth in particular, with such things as stop and frisk. The result of all this has been a huge increase in mass incarceration, as well as the continual murder of large numbers of minority youth by police. At the same time, the way that the U.S. has continued to dominate Mexico, as well as other parts of Latin America, and to distort the economies, corrupt the governments, and bring ruin to the social relations among the people in those countries, all this has resulted in large numbers of people being forced to flee those countries and migrate to the U.S., where they are vulnerable to being viciously exploited in factories and farmlands and other parts of the economy of this country. And large numbers of the younger generation of these immigrants have also formed or joined existing gangs and become involved in the drug trade and related crime. More recently, however, in at least many of the inner city neighborhoods, for a number of reasons, including the fact that the crack epidemic had taken a terrible toll on people, there has been a decrease in the trade in cocaine and the high profits this brought for the relatively small number of higher-ups in the drug trade hierarchy. For a period, particularly during the 1980s and 1990s, given their desolation and desperation, the drug trade was a major employer of youth in the inner cities, female as well as male, and a major source of at least a basic income for many, even if the promise of getting rich remained an illusion for most. Now, even this source of employment and income, as perverse and harmful as it is, has dried up or greatly diminished for many. This has further added to the miserable situation of massive numbers of inner city youth in particular, who have no future under this system, no future but prison and early death, or a life of desperate hustling in one form or another in the attempt to survive and care for loved ones. All this cannot be changed, cannot be transformed and overcome within the confines of this system. Despite what any politician, liberal or outright fascist like Trump, may say, there is no way that this system could reverse itself, bring large parts of industry back to the inner city, and provide meaningful employment with a living wage for all those it is now depriving of this. Even if the government had the political will to try to do this, doing so with the employment of millions of formerly unemployed or underemployed people at a living wage would seriously undermine the competitive positions of American capitalists in the global economy. And if they attempted to do this while at the same time trying to seriously overcome the whole historically evolved relations of white supremacy, this would completely disrupt the social cohesion that holds this country together, with white supremacy a crucial part of this. It is one thing, in fact, it is a very good thing, for good-hearted people, and in particular, many white people, to say and sincerely mean that it is wrong for the police to just wantonly, cruelly murder people and to mobilize in protest against this. But imagine what would happen if, under this system and with the way its economy functions, the government tried to adopt policies that would deal with the long-term unemployment of black people in the inner cities who have not only been denied jobs, but also the training for the jobs that do exist. Imagine what the reaction would be of many white people who would in fact lose their better off positions as a result of these policies. Imagine what would happen if these kinds of policies were applied not just to employment, but to education and on down the line. We have already seen the backlash that was fostered in response to even minimal efforts to implement affirmative action programs in employment and education. Again, this is not simply a matter that white people are racist. Many are racist, although many do not want to be. But the deeper problem is that given the basic way the capitalist economy works and how everyone is encouraged to be out for yourself, and more fundamentally, the fact that people are actually driven and compelled to compete with each other in every significant part of life, including employment and education, it would actually create destructive chaos and conflict among the people and tear apart the cohesion of the society to try to really and fully undo and overcome the reality and effects of centuries of racist oppression under this system. This most definitely and emphatically is not an argument for holding back from struggling against every form of discrimination, inequality, and oppression in every part of society. Fighting back against oppression and wrenching concessions from the powers that be is very important in enabling masses of people to feel their own strength in standing up and standing together in opposing oppression, and drawing people from all parts of society to join in this struggle, rather than feeling isolated, beaten down, and hopeless. And it is important in contributing to the ability of masses of people to gain the understanding and build up the organization necessary for the final all-out struggle to bring down the whole oppressive system. But that is just the point. As important as these mass struggles are, if they are not built toward and do not finally get to the point of taking on the whole system with the aim of bringing it down and bringing something much better into being, then, as I have emphasized before, even where concessions are won, so long as this system remains in power, there will be powerful forces who will move to attack and undermine and seek to reverse even these partial gains. And people will remain oppressed and once more weighed down with a feeling of demoralization as they are once again divided and pitted against each other. The basic and crucial point is that the fight against racial oppression and all oppression must not remain confined within the limits of this system, and instead must be carried out and carried forward as part of the overall struggle toward the goal of abolishing this system. The fact that this oppression cannot be abolished under this system is not a reason for giving up in despair. It is a compelling reason why this system must be and can be abolished, and it is the fundamental basis for why people can be won to wage the revolutionary struggle to finally bring it down. All this is why there will not be any real and meaningful move by the powers that be and any of its politicians and political parties to overcome the centuries-long experience and legacy of brutal racist oppression and the situation it has led to today, where millions and millions of black youth and other youth of color have no prospect of a decent future under this system. As I have pointed out before, so what does this system do with youth that have no future and no prospects? It contains them violently. And all this is why there is systemic and systematic police terror directed at black people and other people of color. It is why this is brought down not only on the youth and others in the inner cities, but why it can and does lead to harassment, brutality, and murder of any black person anywhere, even those with more education and status in society. If the system needs the police to violently contain the masses of people in the inner cities, and it does, then this is bound to spill over and be applied to black people and other people of color more generally. The police have neither the interests, nor the ability, nor the will to make distinctions between good, fill in the blank as to what racist terms they use, and bad ones. And beyond that, the random nature of the brutality and murder makes it all the more effective in terrorizing people, making everyone, even the better off, feel correctly that they could be a target of this. There is a solution, revolution, and a radically new and different world. It is for all these reasons that racist oppression will continue so long as people are living under the domination of this system of capitalism imperialism. It is not only right, but crucially important to rise up and wage a determined fight against this. But it is also crucial to recognize that this racist oppression will never be, can never be, eliminated under this system. And to finally put an end to it, we need a radically different system. We need a radically different economic system, a socialist economic system, mode of production that is geared to and proceeds by developing and utilizing the means of production collectively to meet the needs of the masses of people materially for employment, food, housing, healthcare, and so on, as well as their needs intellectually and culturally, and to provide them with the means not only to live a life worthy of human beings, but also to scientifically understand the basis and need and to more and more consciously take part in carrying forward the transformation of society to finally and completely eliminate all relations of oppression and exploitation and to support that struggle throughout the world. And as one of its highest priorities and goals, this will involve the determined struggle to overcome and finally eliminate racial oppression in every aspect of society. The radically different socialist economy, mode of production, will provide the foundation on which the ongoing process of uprooting racial oppression and all oppression can be waged on favorable ground and can finally succeed in overcoming all this. The following from my work, Breakthroughs, speaks to this key relation and process. Ultimately, the mode of production sets the foundation and the limits of change in terms of how you address any social problem, such as the oppression of women, or the oppression of Black people or Latinos, or the contradiction between mental work and manual work, or the situation with the environment, or the situation of immigrants, and so on. While all those things have reality and dynamics in their own right and aren't reducible to the economic system, they all take place within the framework and within the fundamental dynamics of that economic system. And that economic system, that mode of production, sets the foundation and the ultimate limits of change in regard to all those social questions. So, if you want to get rid of all these different forms of oppression, you have to address them in their own right, but you also have to fundamentally change the economic system to give you the ability to be able to carry through those changes in fundamental terms. To put it another way, you have to have an economic system that doesn't prevent you from making those changes, and instead not only allows, but provides a favorable foundation for making those changes. The Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America provides a sweeping vision and concrete blueprint for such a radically different economic system, and for government institutions, laws, and a legal system, as well as an approach to education, science, art, and culture that go along with this mode of production and contribute to its continual development, opening the way to finally eliminating all oppression and exploitation. And in why we need an actual revolution and how we can really make revolution, as well as other works of mine, the basic strategy is spelled out for carrying out the revolution that will make it possible to apply this Constitution in working to bring about a world free of all the unnecessary suffering and madness to which the masses of humanity are subjected under the domination of this system of capitalism imperialism. This is why and this is how racial oppression and all the oppression which is built into this system of capitalism imperialism can be ended, but only through a revolution to abolish this system. This is why we continue to emphasize this basic truth. We have two choices: either live with all this and condemn future generations to the same or worse if they have a future at all, or make revolution. This is why we continue to boldly raise the slogan, revolution, nothing less. An additional note, the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America and the text and video of my speech, Why We Need an Actual Revolution and How We Can Really Make Revolution, are available at revcom.us. And the text and footnotes for the presentations in these podcasts can also be found at revcom.us.
That was Racial Oppression Can Be Ended, But Not Under This System by Bob Avakian. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back to continue digging into this, so stay tuned.
Thank you. Walter Scott, say his name. Walter Scott, say his name. Walter Scott, say his name. Walter Scott, won't you say his name? Jermaine Reed, say his name. Jermaine Reed, say his name. Jermaine Reed, say his name. Jermaine Reed, won't you say his name? Philip White, say his name. Philip White, say his name. Philip White, say his name. Philip White, won't you say his name? Say his name.
Say his name, George Floyd. That, of course, was Janelle Monáe with Hell You Talkin' About. What is it going to actually take to end this, to end all the suffering that people go through day in and day out? You see them laying in puddles in the sidewalk, or you see people starving, you see people going to jail. It's like one of those the things you see massive numbers of people just trekking away, and you know what's going on. You know what's going on, but we don't always understand why it's happening. And one of the things that Avakian has really, really, really done importantly has been laid bare. He's laid bare all of the stuff of what's the cause of this and what needs to be done to get rid of it. Andy, what do you think about this? Because I was really moved when I, you know, first read this, but then hearing it again as I was preparing for this piece from Avakian really, really hit me hard. You know, in the whole way, everything he's talking about, how even from this point here, we're just all this cannot be changed, cannot be transformed and overcome within the confines of the system. Because that's sort of one of the things that's like a holy grail for people here. You know, you can do it within the system. You just have to be cool about it. Or you have to do something. You can change the system, make it work for us. And what Avakian's laying out is a hard truth for a lot of people. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of his work is that he doesn't screw around with the truth. He makes it available, and it's hard, but it's also it's revealing, and it's very, very, you know, it helps people stand up around this.
I think that's important, Michael. If you don't know what it is you're fighting and the nature of the beast, it's going to be very hard to slay it, and slay it is what ultimately has to be done, and we have to be preparing for that right now. And so, there's all kinds of things that are out there as ways to transform this. Everything from, you know, Biden's New Deal, New Green Deal, to demands that actually seem very utopic of we're going to abolish the police, which you can't do under this system. Even under a new system, you're going to have to transform the people's security forces that are going to be radically different than what these police are today, who serve and protect the capitalist imperialist system and the whole system of white supremacy that's been woven into the fabric of this country, whereas under a new system, a security force would be there to facilitate the transformation of society to overcome all forms of oppression. And the police, rather than killing people wantonly the way Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd, would sooner take their own sacrifice their own life to protect the people, including people who have whatever problems they do have. But I think we should get into this article in some depth. I know there's a number of things we want to bring in, but I would just want to echo one thing that you said, which is the importance of this piece, and it's a lot to take in at one time. And I just want to commend to people that he ended his talk here saying, this is why we continue to boldly raise the slogan, revolution, nothing less. And this may seem self-serving, but it's not. It's actually serving the people. I am the host of a show called The RNL Show, Revolution, Nothing Less Show on YouTube at The RevComs. That's YouTube/The RevComs, where not only is there a show on this topic, including the current episode has a brief illustrated clip from this talk, but you can also find the podcast, Emancipate Humanity with Bob Avakian, where you can hear this entire talk once again. But look, I think what you brought out, Michael, is very important. The nature of this system and the historically involved requirements and dynamics of this system have white supremacy woven into it. And Avakian has made the point many times that white supremacy and capitalism are woven into every thread of the fabric of this system. So what does that actually mean? It means when you say, and he says, the requirements and the dynamics means that this system could not and cannot be reformed to overcome racial oppression. There will be, as I said, no New Deal or no Green New Deal or any other kind of program to really overcome and fundamentally uproot the white supremacy that has just been for you know, 400 years been the reality of black people in this country, and as well as the oppression of Latino people, Latinx people, and of Native Americans. But this all part of white supremacy, but particularly the oppression of black people, is right from the foundation of this country. And if you tried to uproot it, the whole cohesion of the society would unravel because of the fact that it was historically developed. He says in this talk that even if the government had the political will to try to uproot this, doing so with the employment of millions of formerly unemployed or underemployed people at a living wage, that this would seriously undermine the competitive positions of the American capitalists in the global economy. And if they attempted to do this while at the same time trying to seriously overcome the whole historically evolved relations of white supremacy, this would completely disrupt the social cohesion that holds this country together, and with white supremacy a crucial part of this. So see, this is, we saw this. That's the underlying reason why Reconstruction after slavery was betrayed. That's the reason why the gains of the 60s, the hard-fought new rights that were gained are being unraveled. And here we are with these voter restriction rights bringing back that era of black people being disenfranchised even when, after the Civil War, they had won that right. The reason this, why does this happen over and over again, and these pigs get off after they murder people, let alone most of the time they're not even tried, it's because of the very nature that to actually uproot this, whatever honeyed words you'll hear from Kamala Harris or you heard from Barack Obama, they can do nothing fundamentally to change this. That's the reality of this. Very sorry we're on the radio, but I get so passionate about this I can lose myself in it. So, you know, I think just to bring this back, this does not mean that people should not fight against oppression, but rather that this fight should not be limited within what's possible or what people think is possible.
See, that's extremely important. In fact, I was just going to go there with you because it's, you know, this is, look, there's things that people recognize and for in many different ways, they just like it's, I'll try to deal with it on my own, you know, own individual basis. You know, I can actually keep things cool on a certain level. I can, you know, I can help people with other things, whatever. But there's not a recognition, and it's part of what people see, the monstrosity that's the system itself, and the idea that there's no way to get out of this. I mean, it's really, you know, at the same time, it's like I'm just reading this piece here where it says, yeah, it's imperative. It's actually imperative that all this oppression must not remain confined within the limits of this system. You know, the idea that the fight against all that must not remain confined within the limits of this system and instead must be carried out and carried forward as part of the overall struggle towards the goal of abolishing the system. It's not just let's stop the stuff and have a nicer life within capitalism. There's a real, you know, necessity to, yes, stand up against this, understand what's going on, but also to move towards the, you know, to the reality of this has to be changed dramatically.
You know, a lot of times people will say when they hear us talk, they hear revolutionaries talk about, you know, we had to have the revolution, this system cannot be reformed, and they say, well, that's not realistic. That could never happen here. That's not possible. Well, elsewhere, Babavakian has said that the politics of the possible is the politics of monstrosity. And how long do we have to keep playing this same game? Do we have to be getting on this merry-go-round? I mean, unfortunately or fortunately, I'm old enough, as are you, brother, to have been around in at least the late 60s and seen the kind of struggle that was waged and some of the reforms that people didn't think are possible. But even the younger generation saw a black president, and what did he do about the murder of black people by the police? He invited a few reasonable leaders to the White House, and they took the cup of coffee. But are these police being, have they stopped killing people? Did they stop killing people under Obama? How many police were indicted under Obama? How many were convicted? You don't need two hands to count that. You can not even fill it with one hand. So see, this keeps going on and on and on because of the nature of this system. But the system is vulnerable because there's not only are there millions of black people who hate this oppression, and millions of brown and people of other nationalities, now Asian Americans too, beginning to grasp that they have to fight for their against this oppression and white supremacy. But there's also millions and millions of white youth who don't want to live in that kind of world. And all of this has to be directed, one, at every time that this repressive, oppressive system raises its head, people do have to oppose it. But we have a very important strategic concept, which is set this: fight the power and transform the people for revolution. So we do have to fight the power, but that struggle has to be won against, you know, here in this case right now, for the, see that there's actually a conviction of Derek Chauvin. But more than that, and more important than that, people need to change how they understand this system, and that struggle has to be marshaled to be able to gather the forces, the organization, and the understanding of thousands of people getting involved in the movement for an actual revolution. For that time, as things sharpen up in society, and they're pretty sharp already, with these fascists still in the wings, when you could actually make a revolution to overthrow and abolish this system. And maybe what we could do, Michael, I know you have a tape here from a recording of Noche Diaz, who's a leader of the Revolution Club, who's calling for an opportunity to struggle around this on the Revolutionary International Holiday of May 1st. I wonder, you want to play
Kiana,
that
can
now?
We do that? All right, let's
Noche,
do it.
You're here to talk about International Revolutionary May 1st. Let's go for it.
That's right. So look, we got to do that, what you were just saying. And this May 1st, the Revolution Club is calling on people everywhere to gather in public places and parks and celebrate this international revolutionary holiday, declaring we are human beings. We refuse to accept slavery in any form, and putting out to the whole world what Bob Avakian says when he says, we have those two choices. Live with all this and condemn future generations to suffer the same or worse, if they have a future at all, or make revolution. And it's time to get organized for that revolution. So get with the revolution clubs. And this is not just a day where I want to see people having a good time on that Saturday in 4 weeks and 2 days. We're starting now to step out with this message. Because let's not forget, this year started off ugly. First week, you see a violent attempt at a coup by thousands and thousands of fascists, and the main instigator of that attempted coup, Donald Trump, not even punished. An impeachment that basically absolved him of all guilt. Okay, showing you what it's going to mean that we continue to live under this system in this country, and then we're supposed to come together and reconcile with that other half of that country that you saw on full display with all its ugly white supremacists.
74 million people voted
That's right.
for him.
That's right. And in the last few weeks, we've seen waves of violence targeting women, and especially Asian women. And this is especially painful to see shortly after International Women's Day, where we saw something beautiful around the world pouring into the streets in places like Mexico City and Iran and Myanmar and in other places where, you know, women were standing up and demanding an end to all oppression and an end to the chains that bind women. But we still live in a world of male domination. Okay, we can go on and on, and the show will continue to go on. But the fact is, this year also began with something else, which was this statement from Bob Avakian. And we in the Revolution Clubs are setting out this year to make advances in bringing forward the thousands of people who are going to work with BA following his leadership to make that revolution, to make serious advances now, because the time that was bought can't be squandered, like you were saying, and we have to put it to good use. And that's what we're starting in a serious way with a national coordinated effort with these revolutionary celebrations this May 1st.
Okay, so, you know, listeners may have heard me talking with Noche Diaz. This is Andy Z. And what you heard was Noche was on the last night's RNL Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube. And we were having that discussion there. So I encourage you to watch the whole show, but definitely heed what he said, and go to revcom.us and or the social media at the RevComs to find out about this May 1st revolutionary revolutionary celebration. Okay, this is not dance around the maypole or cheerlead for Biden and Harris. This is actually get ready, get prepared. So let's start organizing today for what is going to be necessary to abolish this entire system and every form of oppression and exploitation, not only here in this country, but around the world.
You know, Andy, one of the things that I really do feel, I keep coming back to this because it really struck me. And, I spent a lot of time in the last week reading a lot of the things that Bob Avakian has done and what he's said about this, thinking about all the stuff that's been going on in the society. And the thing that gets me is that it's really, and it's here again, and I've said this before, but this basic and crucial point basically, that it's, do you get that? But it's that the fight against racial oppression and all oppression must not remain confined within the limits of this system and instead must be carried out and carried forward as part of an overall struggle toward the goal of abolishing this system, which is, you know, it's rare that people even consider that, let alone take it up. But it's such an important point in terms of what's the heart of what you're trying to do if you're trying to stand up against this and what we're trying to do, you know, that's at the heart of it. And I think it's really important that people recognize that and understand that it's not just sort of like we're gathering up to, you know, it's not like everybody has their group of people that they bring out to their thing and whatever, and then you go to a demonstration and it's there. But this is an actual movement to change the order of society at large. And I think it's extremely important to understand what that means.
I think that's right. So there's two things that people need to understand. They need to understand the actual nature of the problem that we face, which is in the system itself, and why it can't be reformed. It's not a matter, actually, of white people being racist, although many are, but there's many who aren't. It's not a matter of leaders being just ill-intentioned, although many are. Ultimately, if you get to the top of this, you understand what the rules of the game are. But the rules of the game, the rules of what capitalism is, does not allow you to make, does not allow the system to make the kind of changes that people aspire to protect the environment, to end war, to overcome oppression of women, of differently gendered people. The mass migrations of millions, almost 100 million people around the world due to the workings of this system, the inequality between the nations of the global north and the global south and the devastation of the environment, all of this, you can't fix this within the confines of the system because it's a system where these big aggregates of capital, concentrated nations compete with each other and corporations compete with each other and whoever can exploit people on the planet more efficiently, but especially exploit people, is going to win that game. It's a dog-eat-dog survival of the mighty. You know, it's expand or die. That's the nature of the system. You can't fix that. You need a different system that allows you to make the changes that need to be changed, because it's an economy then under a genuine socialist economy, not a slight fixing of the things such as Bernie Sanders or DSA or any of these other groups that think you can sand off the edges of capitalism. No, you got to get rid of capitalism. And Avakian has written a constitution that would allow for the flourishing of society while overcoming all these inequalities. And look, you guys keep talking about B.A. Bob Avakian. Well, for good reason. He's been working on problems that most people today haven't even thought about. They haven't even thought about how you could actually reorganize the economy and reorganize the society. There's never been a leader like this in this country. There have been heroic leaders and heroic revolutionary leaders, but there's never been a leader like this before. And as you know, we often say now that we can't afford not to follow this leader and to get into it. You know, and he'd be the first one to say, don't just take our word for it, get into it, think about it, compare it with other strategies. Ask yourself, really, if you're going to be truthful, could you actually eliminate white supremacy, the role of the police in defending, serving, and protecting the capital system under this rule? No, you can't. Or make the case for it. You're not going to succeed. And then get into what will be a hard road, but it's also a possible road.
All right, and I have to unfortunately tell you that we've run up on our time, and I know Kiana's cheering over there saying, he got it right for once. Anyway, I want to thank you very much for this, and if there's one thing you want to say before we pull out here.
Yeah, I think it's very important that people continue to listen to the Michael Slate Show, listen to the Revolution Nothing Less Show on YouTube, and go to revcom.us and keep up the struggle.
Before we actually go, I want to add a sort of postscript. the day-to-day proceedings of the trial in Minneapolis of Derek Chauvin for the murder of George Floyd, for the crime of taking George Floyd's life, as we were forced to sit there and watch in an act of torture, terror, and moral depravity. The impact of these proceedings is captured every day in a trial blog at revcom.us. So go there every day, revcom.us, and goddamn get mad. And I'd like to thank all the people who worked on the show today. My assistant producer, Henry Carson, production assistant, Jeff Pryor, and engineer, Kiana Williams. And I'd like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Outer National. First, we take Manhattan by Leonard Cohen. Talk to you again next week.
We see these beautiful pictures at night from the decks of these two U.S. Navy vessels in the Eastern Mediterranean. I am tempted to quote the great Leonard Cohen, "I'm guided by the beauty of our weapons." And they are beautiful pictures.
They sentenced me to 20 years.